This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03, Tuesday, October 15th, 2024. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us today on the WBBM Noon Business Hour. I'm Andy Dane, in for Rob Hart. Travel to Europe remains tremendously popular, with overcrowding of certain cities and destinations. We'll discuss that in our next segment. Right now, Deerfield-headquartered Walgreens says it plans to close 1,200 stores over the next 3 years. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Bruce Japsen, Chicago-based healthcare writer for Forbes. Bruce, good afternoon. Thanks for being with us. Let's start. What's the driver behind the closures of these stores here?
Well, Walgreens has been underperforming. People's retail habits are changing, you know, with online ordering and mail order prescriptions and all sorts of things like that. So generally, the industry, whether it's Walgreens or CVS or whoever, they've been down. Now, Walgreens has also had some self-inflicted issues with, under the previous CEO, Roz Brewer. They spent several billion dollars on rolling out doctor practices attached to Walgreens. That wasn't making money fast enough, so they pulled the plug on that, which has cost them a lot of money. So, but the good news is, I believe the stock is up today. They did lose $3 billion in the quarter for some of these, many of these issues. But I think that Wall Street sees it as like, okay, if you're closing stores, 1,500 stores is a lot, or 1,200 stores is a lot of stores. It's about one in eight of the 8,500 stores that they have, that they think that if they start to close some of these underperforming stores, that it'll turn the corner and they'll be headed to a turnaround under CEO Tim Wentworth.
Bruce, I mean, you mentioned that's a lot. We're talking a lot of stores here. I'm curious kind of what this means for the consumers, those who rely on those Walgreens for pharmacies, and if a move like this could lead to more pharmacy deserts out there.
Well, it could be. It'll be interesting to see. They are not really disclosing a list, as it were. I know that these tend to be controversial. If you do close these stores in pharmacy deserts, as it were, because that is a point of health care, in some cases the only health care in certain neighborhoods. So we'll have to keep an eye on that just to see where they close in Chicago or across the country. They have not been specific on that just yet.
Bruce, you know, these issues aren't, you know, alone for Walgreens. Their competitor CVS struggling too. I'm curious what, in your opinion, it'll take to maybe turn this around and get things back on track to prevent more of these closures moving forward.
Well, I think that one of the things that Walgreens is doing, now CVS is a little bit of a different animal. They own Aetna, which is a large health insurance company. They can entice their Aetna members to use CVS and so forth. But in Walgreens' case, they are investing more in specialty pharmacy. Specialty pharmacies are, you know, drugs that are injected and infused, you know, vaccines, cancer treatments, some of the newer drugs. The bad news for consumers is those drugs tend to be more expensive. But if you're Walgreens, you're saying, wait a minute, most pills and capsules, you got Mark Cuban with a company in this space, Amazon with pharmacy in a space where you're getting your pills and capsules mailed to you. You can't make a big margin on those type of drugs, but where you can make more money is on the highly specialized drugs. So Walgreens, I believe, is spending, they've kind of restructured their business to have a $24 billion specialty pharmacy business. So that is one area where they're focused, and they could certainly do that and help turn around the company.
Now, certainly something to keep an eye on. We'll be doing so. Thanks so much. That's Bruce Japsen, Chicago-based healthcare writer for Forbes. Coming up, visitors to Europe are finding big crowds, even in the off-season.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Latest Travel Tuesday, this is part one. Europe is bustling with visitors, experiencing overcrowding. even during the so-called shoulder season. Joining us now live from Italy, lucky guy, is Joe Brancatelli, editor and publisher of JoeSentMe.com. Joe, thanks for being with us here on the Noon Business Hour today. All right, now we've been hearing about overcrowding in Europe when it comes to tourism. Just how bad is it there right now?
Well, Andy, and it's a lovely 75 degrees here in Rome.
Even all right, no need to rub it in.
I'm not trying to rub it in. I'm telling you that the people who've chosen to come have picked some amazing weather. The problem with what the industry calls over-tourism can't be overblown, Andy. You can barely move on the streets of Rome. I come here every year about this time. I've never seen it like this. The big piazza in front of the Pantheon, which many people may know from the movie Roman Holiday, it looked like Soldier Field during a Bears game. You couldn't move. And it's bad in Venice. It's bad in Amsterdam. And it's leading a lot of the European countries to say, well, we're also going to profit off this by putting taxes on or visitor charges. In Italy, they're talking about putting a charge on to even see the Trevi Fountain, for example.
I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, I'm curious. You mentioned kind of the idea of kind of cashing in here. Curious how maybe some local businesses are responding to an influx of travelers here.
Well, it really depends on the business, Andy. You know, a lot of the businesses, especially restaurants, diners, coffee bars, and cocktail bars, you know, they live and die on that. It's astounding how much the average, in this case, Roman bar or restaurant attendant will speak some English, which is always difficult for those of us who are trying to use our Italian. So they want the business. But the average Roman in this case, or in Venice or in Amsterdam, they're feeling their life is being negatively impacted. They're being driven out of the center cities, to the fringes of their own city, because, you know, everybody wants to be near the Pantheon. Everybody wants to be near the museums and the canals in Amsterdam. So it's a definite mixed bag, good for certain kinds of businesses, bad for the local culture that a lot of the people are coming to visit.
And that's what I wanted to ask you next. You know, on the other side of the coin here, you talk about the travelers. You mentioned Soldier Field-like crowds that I'm sure a lot of people are trying to get away from when they head over there. What kind of challenges does this overcrowding pose for travelers?
Well, I think you have to take what we know and truly apply it. My wife and I were in a restaurant yesterday. This is a local place we've been going to for years. It's untouristed. Table of six next to us, all from Chicago, okay, who would come over on British Airways via London. If you want to live in the town and be Roman or be an Amsterdamer or be Parisian, you now have to come basically in the dead of winter because the summer is impossible. Now the shoulder seasons are overwhelmed with Americans, but not just Americans, also Germans and French people and Spaniards, as they move around the continent. If you're trying to live the life that you want in these kind of towns, come in January and February. The cultural life is in full swing. The locals are happier. The weather may not be quite as good, but at least when you come to Rome, you won't be sitting with other people from, you know, suburban Chicago, maybe.
Well, there you go. Really helpful stuff. I'll let you go enjoy that 75-degree weather. Thanks so much. That's Joe Brancatelli in Italy, editor and publisher of JoeSentMe.com. Up next, transforming a business brand into a lifestyle.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
To transform a brand into a lifestyle, retailers like Ralph Lauren, Tommy Bahama, and RH are successfully adding restaurants, enhancing the customer experience and generating loyalty. Joining us now to discuss the strategy is RJ Hotovy, head of analytical research at foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. RJ, thanks for being with us here on the Noon Business Hour. So tell us kind of how this strategy works and why it appears to be working so well.
Yeah, it really started with a lot of the luxury brands. You mentioned Ralph Lauren, but we've seen a couple others open up restaurants as well. And I really think it's the purpose, at least initially, was to make the brands more accessible to everyone. Not everyone's able to afford luxury, and this is a way for them to kind of introduce themselves to the brand. And then as they grow and, you know, have more disposable income, they can go there. But more and more often, we're starting to see other brands outside the luxury space start to embrace restaurants as a way to create a brand image and foster frequency. Tommy Bahama, Ralph Lauren are great examples of that. RH is another one. And it's really interesting because when we look at the data, you know, those visitors, you know, tend to come back pretty frequently, visit the namesake stores quite a bit too. So I think it's an interesting strategy. It's one that kind of foster that relationship with the customer. And I expect more brands to explore this idea in the future.
How are customers kind of perceiving these brands then that offer, you mentioned kind of the benefits there for those who maybe aren't able to afford the luxury brands, these dining experiences, how does that maybe change the perception that customers may have?
Generally speaking, a lot of the restaurants that are open are kind of two-pronged. There's one that's, you know, there's restaurants a little bit more accessible, but they also maintain, you know, kind of high-end restaurants as well, too, for some of these brands. So, I think right now it's a great strategy to help introduce a lot of customers. But at the same time, too, a lot of restaurants, other retail brands are being very protective of their overall image and making sure that it aligns with the strategy, too. So I think that is key here. That is really part of the strategy. You can't have a restaurant that is disjointed from what your brand image is.
RJ, what are some of the concepts that work best for some of these lifestyle brands when it comes to restaurants?
Yeah, I think RH has done a really good job. You know, home furnishings as a whole is going through a challenge. But if you look at the restaurants themselves, you know, they continue to do well in the markets they open in. Our visitation data suggests that. And good frequency, you know, with the with the stores themselves. Tommy Bahama is an interesting one too. That's a none that, you know, usually doesn't fall in that gap, but they've opened up about 15-16 restaurant locations and generally pretty high visitation with their actual apparel and accessory stores there too. So those are some of the groups that at least our data suggests are doing pretty well in the strategy. And again, I think it's probably early innings here. I think we're going to see more and more brands embrace the strategy in the future.
Well, fascinating stuff. Something to keep an eye out for, that's for sure. Thanks so much. That's RJ Hoddity, head of analytical research at foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. Thanks so much for being with us today. I'm Andy Dane in for Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Former President Trump talks tariffs during an appearance here in Chicago. Discharge upgrades being granted to former LGBTQ plus members of the military. In Travel Tuesday, some people are taking a vacation to unplug from the election year frenzy. And dog owners may find themselves in the footwear section of their local pet store. On Wall Street, the Dow is down 178 points, NASDAQ dropping 184, S&P down 31 points. AccuWeather says breezy, chilly, cloudy, and rainy the rest of the day. The high just 51 degrees. Right now, light rain falling 46 degrees in Chicago at 12:31. Well, former President Trump is in downtown this hour taking part in an interview co-hosted by Bloomberg News and the Economic Club of Chicago. Trump defending his plan to impose tariffs of up to 100, 200, even 300% on some imports. Here's part of a discussion a few moments ago with Bloomberg editor-in-chief John Micklethwaite.
What about consumers, people out there?
They're going to be the biggest beneficiary.
Yeah, critics say your tariffs will end up being like a national sales tax.
Nope.
Because
the country
if you have America at the moment has $3 trillion worth of imports. You're going to add tariffs to every single one of them. That is going to push up the cost for all those people who want to buy foreign goods.
Now, what's going to happen?
That is just simple mathematics, President Trump.
It's not. It is, but not the way you figured. I was always very good at mathematics. Yes. Let me tell you, you're saying $3 trillion.
That's $3 trillion worth of imports.
And they don't have to pay. And if, by the higher the tariff, the more likely it is to have them come into the
higher
country.
The tariff, the more you're going to put on the value of that piece, those goods, the higher people are going to pay in shops.
Ready? The higher the tariff, the more likely it is that the company will come into the United States and build a factory in the United States so it doesn't have to pay the tariff.
Protesters from several groups, including the U.S. Palestinian Community Network and the Chicago Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression, have taken to the streets near that event. A review of records of troops forced out of the military under the now-repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy has resulted in almost all of them having favorable action taken. Your CBS News reporter Christopher Cruz.
Of the 851 cases the Pentagon reviewed, even when the former troops didn't ask them to do so, almost 97% of them had discharges upgraded or the reasons for separation from the military changed.
Of the more than 13,000 troops kicked out under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, about 96% now have an honorable discharge.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The markets are trading lower. Joining us now in the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is J.J. Kinahan, CEO and of IG North America and president of Tasty Trade. J.J., good afternoon. Thanks for being with us today. Stocks a little soft. What's behind the action on Wall Street as you kind of take a look here this afternoon?
Well, a lot of it has to do with earnings, as you know have been reporting on the show. The financials actually came in with some, I think, in some ways better than expected earnings, but the interest that they make in the future comes into question a little bit, obviously, as we see a probability of rate cuts in both November and December, which will affect their interest margin. I think the positive news for the earnings from the financials this morning was around their trading and the fact that we are starting to see more and more deals, which has helped their income there. And then the other stock that's really weighing, particularly on the dollar, is United Healthcare, which, that stock down more than 7% has certainly weighed significantly on some of the major indices. And then, of course, we see the chips, which, let's face it, what NVIDIA, et cetera, has done has been absolutely spectacular. But when you get some warnings this morning that it may be more of a ASML talking about a continual gradual rather than I think some of the explosive action we've seen in there around AI. And in general, I think what you're going to continue to see this season is AI being called into question. Really cool if you're asking it a question, but at the end of the day, these companies are going to be asked, what's the actual return on something we spent hundreds of millions of dollars on?
JJ, as a whole, it's been a banner year in 2024 for the markets. Do you believe that momentum will continue through the end of the year here?
Well, at the end of the day, if you look around the world, what's a better investment, it seems, than the U.S. stock market? It's been an incredible performer. Yes, we may see a little bit of rockiness heading into the election or just after the election. But overall, I think most people are staying with, I'll stay with it until something shows me a little bit different. And at the end of the day, actually, every sell-off we've seen so far this year, as it turned out, has been a buying opportunity for the market overall. And so I think that, the other thing that makes me bullish, quite honestly, Andy, is if you think about the years that we've had these incredible outperformances, most of the time, everyone was talking about the stock market, how you had to be involved. What's, I think, interesting here is it's the rally that nobody loves. Nobody's like, oh, my God, I feel like I have to be more invested. People are still fearful of the market, and that's usually when it can continue higher with the path of least resistance.
JJ, you mentioned the election, obviously. Curious how that plays into your investment strategy, if at all, here.
Well, I think, as every individual starts to get their opinion about which one of the two candidates will lead, you just had a story about President Trump talking about, tariffs, et cetera. Okay, so you have to think, who is that good for? Who is that bad for? And I think based on your thesis of who you believe will win, you start to form some opinions about what it means for taxes and what it can mean for maybe the automakers, et cetera. And I think that's how you have to form, if people are like, well, how do I use elections? In my opinion, that's the best way to use elections for your investments is to say, should I be adjusting part of my portfolio? Again, you never really want to go all in one way or the other. But if you are long something you think is going to get hurt because one of the presidential proposals, et cetera, even if it doesn't pass, may see some pressure on it, then maybe time to lighten up on that long stock and look for something that could be favorable.
Great stuff, as always. Thanks so much. That is J.J. Kinahan. I'm sorry, J.J., go ahead.
Oh, I said thanks for having me. Have
Absolutely. J.J. Kinahan, CEO of IG North America and president of Tasty Trade. Up next to Travel Tuesday, taking a break from the campaign hoopla by getting out of town.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Business Hour continues.
In this portion of the show, sponsored by Pre-Flight Airport Parking, it is Travel Tuesday, and election week getaways are trending this year as people rush to unplug and escape the political frenzy in favor of a peaceful retreat. We now welcome in Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors, online at travelbta.com. Angie, thanks for being with us. All right, now, it certainly makes sense in theory. Tell us a little bit about the popularity and people saying, you know what, come election time, I'm just going to get out of here.
Right. I mean, I think it's going to be a contentious election. I think that's the consensus across the board, regardless of your party preferences. And knowing that voter turnout is likely to be lower this year, it kind of rings to the fact that people just want to set the election aside. And that may mean getting away and retreating outside of being home and watching things on that television.
Angie, what are some of the most popular places people may decide to go to kind of unplug from all this political business?
Well, if you're looking to get away from the politics, you're probably not going to be in an urban environment where there might be some protesting. So I would suggest places that are a little bit more remote and removed, whether that's, you know, renting an Airbnb, getting some friends together to share a villa, or, you know, getting that 3-4 night getaway. I would suggest places like Wine Country, maybe Big Sur, Sedona, Arizona, Door County, which is close to Chicago. And it wouldn't surprise me that people may just look at those last minute cruises, hopefully hurricane season behind us, and maybe get away at some, you know, options might be 4-day cruises. Virgin Voyages is one where it's adult only and it's an easy option to get away. And I believe those people would be focused on fun and entertainment rather than the politics that are facing us this time of year.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious too, you know, you mentioned whether it's Airbnb, whether it's maybe some of these cruise lines. Is there an opportunity there for them to capitalize and maybe, you know, advertise and tell people, look, if you want a break from all the election news, come out here. I mean, is there an opportunity here for travel destinations to capitalize?
I believe it's a perfect time, especially for destinations like, take Costa Rica, for example. It is not the time of year to be in Costa Rica in October, but the weather starts to improve. It's the rainy season in October. But yeah, there could be this shout out where you could just encourage people to travel. And a lot of times in travel, there's the, of course, this notion that we need to plan ahead and it's the best opportunity to really look into the availability, perhaps better pricing. But also when you see those last minute sold out situations and all of a sudden there's a cancellation or there's one or two cabins on an expedition cruise to the Galapagos Islands or maybe even, you know, a last minute trip to Europe that you plan. These are great opportunities to just look at what's being promoted by the cruise lines and also the hoteliers. I agree. It's an opportunity for them to capitalize and to encourage people to travel and get away from all the politics and the noisiness of an election year.
And Angie, quickly, before we let you go, anyone who's hearing this and thinking, you know what, I didn't think of this, but I want to do this. They don't have a ton of time. Any tips for last minute travelers who are trying to get out of Dodge before November 5th?
Yes, I think it's important to look at availability for where you're staying. So accommodations is key at the same time as planning air. Oftentimes you might see a deal somewhere for the hotel lodging, but then when you go to book air, you're seeing flights that are $2,000-$3,000, no joke, to the Caribbean from Chicago sometimes these days. So make sure you have a good sense of what the overall costs are going to be. What is that cruise going to cost? What is that hotel? And can I get airfare at a reasonable price? Or maybe there's that opportunity to take advantage of some of your airline points. So make sure on a last minute situation, you're making those decisions simultaneously to get the best value.
Really helpful stuff. Thanks so much. That is Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors, online at TravelBTA. The pet category is a major driver of growth for retailers, and Crocs is tapping into the trend with a new line of dog clogs launched during its Croctober campaign. We're joined now by Bob Phibb, CEO of The Retail Doctor, online at retaildoc.com. Bob, thanks for being with us. All right, so dog clogs, that's a new one for me. Why exactly is the pet category such a big driver here for retail growth?
You almost said that with a straight face. Hey,
couldn't do it.
147 billion on pet-related expenses. And let's face it, Crocs is really popular with young people. And, you know, this is written as a PR stunt for social media, and they're going to get a lot of mileage out of it. Just because, you know, who doesn't love the idea of Croctober?
It's a great idea, and one that, yeah, you're right. I really cannot say with a straight face. You mentioned that this is big on social media. I'm sure we'll be seeing TikToks of people, you know, with their putting their dogs in these Crocs. Is that an actual, you know, success for business? I mean, will people actually be buying those, or is it more of a social media to get people talking online thing?
You know, it's funny that with the last Disney or Pixar movie they had, Cars, they had Lightning McQueen. They came out with a special Crocs just for them. They sold out within an hour after it launched on their website. So you're talking about a fanatic fan base. I mean, I was just reading it. Brock's Candy Corn has come up with two hotel suites that you can rent out, all done in that. Hefty introduced pumpkin-scented trash bags. I don't know, a couple years ago, and now they sell out online. So fans are what we're talking about. And, you know, raving fans is it. And if your dog can do it, you're going to get twice the mileage, right? Because you get the human and the dog.
Yeah, exactly. And the pumpkin spiced garbage bags, that's an interesting one there as well. You know, Bob, I'm curious too, just as these partnerships, especially when it comes to pet supply companies, how does that impact success of these new product launches?
Well, that's the whole thing, because, right, you're selling to the owner, not to the dog. That's what's different. You don't have to worry about how it fits or something else, like if you were selling this direct to a human being. So, you know, when you're selling leashes and collars, it's not about the dog, it's about the owner. And let's face it, if you can glam up your pup and you can't glam up yourself, hey, you're going to glam up the pup because everyone's going to look at you and say, that looks croc-mazing.
Wow, there you go. Now that's the line of the show right there. Hopefully my dog at home is not listening. I'm not sure if dog clogs are on the shopping list, but very interesting stuff.
Go out and buy them.
There you go. There you go. Very great stuff. Thanks so much. That is Bob Phibb, CEO of The Retail Doctor, online at retaildoc.com. A reminder, if you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the Odyssey app.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.